The Panama Canal, one of the greatest engineering feats of all history, like the lunar landing or the moonwalk of its day. The Panama Canal, a symbol of Teddy Roosevelt's America and big stick diplomacy. The Panama Canal, a project that cost over 25,000 lives by the time it was opened in 1914. And after all this, the question today is whether the United States should give up control to Panama. Some people have argued that keeping the canal will be a matter of petty macho jingoism. Others believe that pulling out will be a sign of craven weakness on the part of a declining power. Who is right? The issue of the Panama Canal could be characterized as 50 miles of trouble. Many Americans believe that we have justly bought and paid for the canal, and it's just as much an American institution as the Louisiana Purchase, Seward's Folly, or the Alamo. So the first question we might ask about the Panama Canal is whether the United States really does own the waterway. After all, what is the use in arguing about giving something away when we allegedly do not own it in the first place? The current status of the canal is governed by the terms of the original 1903 Hay-Bunau-Varilla Treaty, still in force. In this treaty, Panama granted the United States in perpetuity a strip of territory crossing the isthmus in which the United States could exercise all the rights, power, and authority which it would possess and exercise if it were the sovereign of the territory, to the entire exclusion of the exercise by the Republic of Panama of any such sovereign rights, power, or authority. For this grant of sovereignty in perpetuity, the United States paid Panama the full purchase price of $10 million and later indemnified the owners of the land by purchasing it from them, thus acquiring complete ownership of all the land in the canal zone. The phrase in perpetuity is found a total of 7 times in the treaty, rather an interesting total. The question of whether the United States has sovereignty over the canal seems to be more a question for semanticists than anyone else. In fact, the whole question of ownership of the canal and the surrounding canal zone is part of the great canal debate. Saul Leibowitz, who negotiated the new treaties which were submitted to the Senate in 1977 for ratification, has said, and I quote, "We never owned the canal," end quote. And therefore, he reasoned, it isn't as if the new treaties were actually transferring ownership. Could Leibowitz be mistaken? In 1907, a man from Chicago brought suit to the Supreme Court in which he challenged the idea of putting government money into the Panama Canal and the canal zone on the grounds that it amounted to using tax money to make internal improvements in another country. The case was entitled Wilson versus Shaw. In it, the Supreme Court dismissed that line of argument as absurd and definitely ruled that the canal and surrounding zone were U.S. territory. But even if the United States owns the canal, why should anyone be concerned about the transfer of ownership to Panama? In the age of ICBMs and aircraft carriers, why worry about the great accomplishments back in 1903? In the first place, it's difficult to conceive of more strategic single piece of real estate anywhere on the face of this earth than that of the canal zone with its 50-mile-long freshwater link between the Atlantic and the Pacific Oceans. Approximately 13,200 ships transited the canal in 1976, nearly 3/4 of them going to or coming from American ports, carrying 1/6 of U.S. ocean-borne commerce. While some of the newer supertankers are too big for the canal's 1,000 by 110-foot locks, the vast majority of the world's ocean-going vessels can easily navigate the waterway, including all the newer container ships, which have revolutionized the shipping industry. The economic impact of the closure of the canal upon American industry, should that ever occur, would range all the way from seriously inflationary to catastrophic. With dependence on foreign oil rising nearer the 50% mark, the United States, in the interest of saving fuel alone, cannot afford the prospect of stringing its shipping around the horn of South America. A recent report by the Maritime Administration states that if the canal were closed, there would be the following: a 71% increase in average annual consumption of fuel by carriers of U.S. foreign trade, a 31-day increase in average shipping time, a $583 million increase in the yearly total delivered price of all imports. Particularly important in this regard is the fact that, in the words of Forbes, a business magazine, the canal is the only avenue for shipping Alaskan North Slope oil to the U.S. East Coast. Moreover, over one-fifth of the $23 million in U.S. farm exports goes through the canal. But the United States is by no means the only beneficiary of the canal, which has been called the funnel of world commerce. To maritime powers such as Japan, Norway, the United Kingdom, and Greece, unhampered use of the waterway is absolutely essential. Without the canal, the Japanese, who transport one-third of their oceanic trade through it, could not effectively ship their goods to the east coast of the United States or to Brazil, where they have a giant market, or to Western Europe. The Japanese steel industry, in turn, depends upon shipment through the canal for nearly all of its coal and coke supplies. Closure, or even restricted use of the canal, could be the death knell of Britain's shaky economy. Each year, over 60% of British registered shipping transits the isthmus. Several Latin American nations also have a huge stake in the canal operation. Specifically, three-quarters of Ecuador's trade transits the canal, and half of Peru's. Accordingly, while these and other Latin American countries like Colombia and Chile publicly supported U.S. cession of the canal, they conducted back-channel talks with Washington to make sure that there would be American guarantees of uninterrupted operation. Perhaps even more important is the military significance of the canal. The waterway gives the U.S. Navy a remarkable degree of flexibility and economy in operations, which can be an important factor in an era of defense budget cuts. Of all the combat vessels in the United States Navy, numbering around 500, only 13, the supercarriers, can't transit the canal. Furthermore, the newer generation of warships are smaller but more effective than the great behemoths of yesterday, and they certainly won't have any trouble going through the locks. The canal has already proven its military importance in a modern age. For example, during the Cuban Missile Crisis, Marines and supplies from the West Coast were ferried through the canal to the Caribbean. If they had to pass around Cape Horn, they would never have arrived in time to influence the outcome at all. In the 1970s, the canal takes on even greater importance with the decline of the American Navy relative to that of the Soviet Union. One leading American military analyst has written this concerning the Panama Canal, and I quote, "It is only because of the waterway that we are able to risk having what amounts to a bare-bones one-ocean navy." At a time when the United States is outnumbered in submarines and surface ships more than at any other time since 1945, the U.S. Navy needs the ability to quickly transfer ships from one ocean to another. To take the time to send a fleet around the Horn, even in modern times, might mean the difference between winning or losing a war.
A rising tide of controversy over the Panama Canal has threatened to become a flood of contention. Any issue this sensitive and this volatile requires action based on fact. Panama Canal, Strategic Surrender, is a free booklet that helps you view the issue in proper perspective. Call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. Stay ahead of the rising tide of controversy. Request your own free copy of Panama Canal, Strategic Surrender. Call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
Pick up the telephone and dial that toll-free number and ask for this brochure, Panama Canal, Is It Really a Strategic Surrender? The number is toll-free. It costs you nothing. 800-423-4444. Or in California, Alaska, and Hawaii, dial area 213-577-5225. It's absolutely free of charge, of course. Well, to this day, the Panama Canal remains a breathtaking feat of engineering. A ship entering from the Atlantic side, for example, would sail up a dredged channel at Limon Bay and proceed through the Gatun Locks. Water flows down from Gatun Lake, which fills three successive stages of locks. As water fills each lock, the ship rises. In Gatun locks, the ocean-going vessel rises from the Atlantic Ocean 85 feet to Gatun Lake. From there, it travels 24 miles to the Galliard Cut, an 8-mile, 500-foot-wide channel. In 7 more miles, it comes to the Pedro Miguel locks, where it is lowered 31 feet to Lake Miraflores, which is about a mile across. After this, it goes through yet another set of locks, which in 2 stages drops the ship down 54 feet to another channel, 8 miles long, leading to the Pacific Ocean. For safety's sake, only small vessels are allowed to go through under their own power. Larger ships are towed by locomotives. It can take more than 20 hours for a ship to make the passage at an average cost of about $11,000. While this may seem expensive, it is about 1/10 the cost of sailing around the Cape Horn of South America. The canal, however, has not been run as a profit-making operation as it could have been, but more like a public utility, since the United States has kept the rates virtually unchanged since it was opened in 1914. All nations have benefited. Dr. Stephen R. Gibbs of the Institute for Marine Studies at the University of Washington even estimated, were the United States to contemplate selling the canal to a profit-maximizing operator, it should consider a sale price in the range of $2 to $4 billion. Of course, because the canal is so valuable to world shipping, and because it has pretty much been run at cost, the Panamanian government feels that it receives too little in comparison to what the canal produces. At the moment, Panama receives $2.3 million per year out of the shipping tolls. To take this a step further, most Panamanians, of course, feel that they were cheated out of the ownership of the canal. They point out how it was a Frenchman and not a Panamanian who negotiated the terms of the 1903 treaty in the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York. It's important to historically take a look at the events to see what really happened. A Panamanian secessionist, Dr. Manuel Amador Guerrero, met with the then head of the Panama Canal Company, Felipe Buna Varilla, in New York City on September 24, 1903. Amador wanted assurance that the United States would support a Panamanian revolution. Buna Varilla left for Washington to put the question to President Theodore Roosevelt. He received no assurances. After arriving in Panama, Amador sent a coded cable saying Colombian troops would be on the scene in 5 days and requested a U.S. steamer at Colón. Soon afterward, the USS Nashville arrived at Colón, triggering the Panamanian Revolution, which remained peaceful due to the presence of U.S. troops. At this point, Buna Varilla immediately set to work on revising the proposed canal treaty to ensure Senate approval. He expanded the proposed canal zone from 6 to 10 miles, and while the United States had originally only asked for sovereign rights to be renewed every 100 years, Buna Varilla sweetened the deal by granting them, quote, in perpetuity, which was stated 7 times in the treaty. At this point, the Panamanians had the chance to turn down the treaty, but they didn't. They knew the United States could build a canal in Nicaragua, so the provisional government ratified the treaty, as did the first elected Panamanian parliament in 1904. Most government officials appear to have forgotten that very important point. For the next decade, the United States excavated over 232 million cubic yards of earth, almost 3 times as much as Suez, at a cost of $352 million. Unlike most modern engineering marvels, the canal not only opened on time in 1914, but it was completed under budget. Think of that, and think about the Superdome. For most of its history, the United States and Panama have worked peacefully, and certainly for both sides, profitably, in the canal enterprise. The canal has greatly benefited American commerce and industry, while canal revenues, directly and indirectly, have poured hundreds of millions of dollars into the Panamanian economy. But it must be admitted, it's a reality. The American presence on a small strip of U.S.-owned territory operating under American laws, which has rankled certain elements in Panama almost from the very beginning. Anti-Americanism in Panama is nothing new. For example, in May 1958, university students marched on the presidential palace in Panama City demanding immediate Panamanian sovereignty over the canal zone. Since no action was taken, 6 days of street fighting and bloodshed erupted in Panama City and Colón, requiring the Panamanian National Guard to restore order. Then, in November 1959, Panamanian mobs invaded the canal zone, overwhelming civilian police, requiring the use of U.S. troops to protect the lives of Americans and the canal. The worst rioting took place in January 1964, when frenzied mobs attacked the canal zone. The U.S. Army battled them to protect our citizens and to prevent damage to the canal itself. During this attack, the Panamanian National Guard, on orders from the President of Panama, remained in their barracks and did nothing whatever to quell the riot. The unrestrained mob also looted and burned American-owned property in the city of Panama. 3 U.S. soldiers and 21 Panamanian citizens were killed. Because of Panamanian dissatisfaction with the 1903 treaty, the State Department recently concluded a new treaty to replace the old one. Essential points called for an early transfer of the canal zone to Panama and the setting of a date when Panama would assume total responsibility for running the canal. Under the treaty which came out of these negotiations, Panama will take over 65% of the canal zone now and the rest by the end of 1999. Americans living in the zone will immediately come under the jurisdiction of Panamanian courts. The United States will also pay up to $70 million a year for operating rights to the canal and turn over to the Panamanians the entire operation of the waterway over the next 23 years. At the moment, Panama does not have the skilled manpower to take over the canal. In addition, we will kick in $345 million in foreign aid. Also, in the new treaty, is that the United States won't even negotiate to build a canal in another country without the permission of the Panamanian government. And that just blows your mind. What can we be thinking? This is to reassure Panama that we won't undercut the value of their natural resource. Two areas of ambiguity in the treaty submitted to the Senate in 1977 have caused a great deal of controversy. First, it is unclear whether the United States would have the right to militarily intervene in the canal zone after the year 2000 because it would then be Panamanian territory. Secondly, it is unclear whether the United States would, in time of war, have the right to send its naval ships to the head of the line. But in any case, the essence of President Carter's current treaty is clear, that what was previously American territory, what was American territory by force of arms or by purchase, just as clearly as the Louisiana Purchase, just as clearly as Alaska, just as clearly as the 13 colonies, just as clearly as some of our southwestern states in the war with Spain, American territory in perpetuity will become Panamanian territory.
Plain Truth, the International Publication of Understanding. Plain Truth. The information you need in today's changing society. Plain Truth. Correspondents in all quarters of the globe report on current trends. For your free subscription to the monthly Plain Truth magazine, call toll-free 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
Let me send you your free copy of the Plain Truth magazine. Significant articles on the matters under consideration in this program and others. For example, on this copy, Why America is in Global Retreat. And certainly the Panama Canal is one vital area where we are in retreat. You can have it free if you'll pick up the telephone and dial 800-423-4444. And the operators are waiting right now to take your call. Or if you live in California, Alaska, or Hawaii, then dial area 213-577-5225. The most important consideration on the part of those in the State Department pushing for a new Panama Canal treaty seems to be whether America could actually defend the canal against Panamanian attack. They argue that many forms of terrorism could disrupt its operation. One scenario, for example, considered by military planners, envisions the recruiting by the Panama government of 10,000 professional guerrillas from abroad, probably Argentina, Chile, or somewhere. The jungles of Panama, said an officer attached to the U.S. Southern Command in Panama, could easily swallow up 100,000 GIs. He points out that guerrillas operating in these jungles could make the canal virtually impassable by striking at transiting ships with rockets or mortars. Also, they could immobilize the locks with mortars and put the whole canal out of commission for as long as 2 years. On the other hand, opponents point out that the United States was able to successfully defend the canal in World War II. And furthermore, these people note that the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff do believe that the United States can protect the canal, given 100,000 troops, and that Panama, as of now, doesn't even have an army, only a 9,000-man National Guard. They also point out that it would be much easier to defend the canal against guerrillas under the present treaty than when U.S. troops are withdrawn to Florida or Puerto Rico. Another point of contention is economics. Given Panama's current sad state of affairs, an economy on the verge of bankruptcy, unemployment at 15%, and recent riots against increased food prices which nearly toppled Torrijos' government, the temptation will be great for her politicians to milk the users of the waterway. Proponents of the new treaty argued that this is justified because the canal is supposedly Panama's primary natural resource. Critics of America's retention of the canal, including Vice President Mondale, charged that our presence in Panama is the last remaining vestige of colonialism. I had not realized that the Soviet Union has given back Latvia, Estonia, and Lithuania, or pulled their troops out of Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Romania, Poland, East Germany, or withdrawn from their regions of influence in other areas of the world. Are we supposed to go through this mindless exercise of showing the rest of the world how righteous we are, that we eschew the obtaining of territory and the maintenance and exercise of sovereignty over such territory under force of arms? Then we've got to give back San Francisco and Northern California to the Russians. We've got to give back Alaska to the Russians. We've got to give back California, Nevada, Colorado, Arizona, New Mexico, and most of Texas to the Mexican government. We've got to give back all of the intervening territory all the way east of the Mississippi down to Louisiana and clear up to Montana and Oregon to the French, the Louisiana Purchase, because we bought that land. And we've got to give back the original 13 colonies to England. And when we get through giving it all back, then, well, never mind. But it makes you wonder, how in the world are we ever going to get rid of this idea that colonialism was, at its point in time, a very great, hideous evil that we'll never get rid of repenting of it, that we're terribly sorry, and on the other hand, we allow the monumental, monstrous, day-by-day growth of one of the greatest colonial powers the world has ever seen. With its own big stick policy, with its own version of its own Asiatic Monroe Doctrine, the growth of the Soviet Union. Of course, there's the ever-present worry of communist influence moving in. An important article in this regard recently appeared in the official Soviet military organ, Red Star. Major Sergei Yuvorov wrote, "Due to its privileged location at the juncture between South America and the rest of the continent, including the canal that permits United States warships to operate simultaneously in the Atlantic and the Pacific, the canal zone must be considered by the Soviet Union as a priority zone." Pretty strong words from a Soviet military publication. One can easily envision a time when a radicalized Panama, under Soviet or even United Nations third world pressure, could adopt a selective policy of who could use a canal and who couldn't. Such as no American ships, no U.S. vessels under foreign flags like Liberia, no ships of any nation trading with any country on which the U.N. should decide to slap an embargo. And irony of all ironies, we could even see engineers, pilots, and technicians from the communist world manning the canal jobs vacated by Americans. But perhaps the most important point of dispute over the Panama Canal is what its giveaway says about the destiny and the power of the United States. Hanson Baldwin of the American Enterprise Institute, a think tank in Washington, points out, and I quote, "Even more compelling than the military importance of the canal are the political and psychological considerations. Since the failure at the Bay of Pigs, U.S. foreign policy has suffered a series of severe defeats. We've been in retreat in many places around the world. Human errors, poor leadership, and a lack of mobilized national will have led to the loss of Vietnam and our retreat from Southeast Asia, the debacle of Angola, the substitution of communists for U.S. influence in Ethiopia, as the Pueblo, Mayaguez, and other incidents have shown. Even second and third-rate powers now dare to tweak Uncle Sam's nose." Even stronger language, though, is used by conservative political writer Patrick Buchanan. "Behind our willingness to negotiate away our territory," he writes, "is the dirty little secret that if the United States refuses to take its flag down from the canal zone, the Panamanians and their Latin allies will tear it down for us, and we don't want to fight." Down through the years, America's officials have consistently whittled away at their nation's sovereign position in the zone. Donald M. Dozer, professor of Latin American history, explains, "Continuing demands of Panamanians have been met by accelerating demands, blackmail, and temper tantrums on their part. One concession has led to another concession, and our relations with Panama for the last 20 years have simply been a succession of concessions on our part. It's as if the negotiators for both parties have been on the same side, Panama's." Or, as the Wall Street Journal editorialized, it appears that the United States has decided to surrender the canal because of a trembling fear of the Panamanian Wehrmacht. In spite of all the arguments, there is one aspect about the Panama Canal that absolutely transcends politics. The one part of the whole canal issue which everybody totally overlooks, and very few people know nothing about, is its role in biblical prophecy. Long-time readers of the Plain Truth magazine and listeners to the World Tomorrow radio program know that the United States, Britain, and the English-speaking Commonwealth nations have been end-time recipients of the birthright promise of national greatness conferred by Almighty God upon the patriarch Abraham and his seed in perpetuity. In detailing elements of this promise, God told Abraham, and I quote, that in blessing I will bless you, and in multiplying I will multiply your seed as the stars of the heavens, and as the sand which is upon the seashore, and your seed shall possess the gate of his enemies. The Fenton translation put it this way, and your race will possess the gates, plural, of its enemies. The gates of enemy nations are the strategic land and sea gates of entrance to or exit from these nations and other nations that control the sea lanes and the flow of commerce and trade. Although all wealth comes out of the ground, prosperity and affluence on a national scale have come also by industry and commerce. And commerce between nations, even in this jet age, has been transacted almost totally via the sea lanes. The keys to the world's sea lanes, moreover, are the various sea gates, which Soviet strategists view, interestingly enough, as choke points, areas to grab hold of and restrict others' access to, not as gates which swing wide open to the commerce of the world for the benefit of all nations, as we have done in Panama, but to choke off such trade and to use it for political and military advantage. In their rise to world power, Britain and America came into possession of nearly every major land and sea gate in the world. The Straits of Malacca, Singapore, Gibraltar, Suez, Aden, the canal, all have been lost as Britain's sun has been setting, and that nation has shriveled back to little England. The Panama Canal is next on the list to go. The Russian Navy is steaming toward the gate. Unless the American people and their political leaders recognize and return to the God who has faithfully blessed their nation so abundantly for the past two centuries, then we're going to see a continuing global retreat on the part of our country. This is not our land, as the song goes, but God's land. The Panama Canal Seagate is part and parcel of America's God-given birthright, a necessary, vital, territorial ingredient which has ensured and protected our inheritance. If, for whatever reason, good or bad, the Panama Canal is surrendered by the United States to another nation, it will represent a significant milestone in the prophetic decline of this country, because it will mean that God is allowing us to give away our birthright blessing.
For the free literature offered on this program, write Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. In Canada, Box 44, Vancouver, B.C. Or in the continental United States, you may call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. In California, dial direct, 213-577-5225. All literature is free upon request.